Once again, if you didn't get a copy of the sheet, we do have some at the back. If you look at the far left, Matthew chapter 28 and verse 1, we had some things to say about the women last time. I gave you sort of a general overview and said that tonight we would delve into that more deeply. But look at that first verse. Now, late on the Sabbath day, that is, on Sunday, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, came Mary Magdalene and the other Mary to do what? To see the sepulchre or see the tomb. We often think about the women in terms of coming to the Lord's tomb, the Lord's grave, to bring spices. And I think it's in Mark's account. Do we have the word anoint there? Yeah. That's in Mark chapter 16 and verse 1. I didn't mention this last time, but the word anoint, what would that suggest as far as a type of spice? Yeah, I think it's got to be a liquid. So that's another little detail that you can pick up from that. So these were not necessarily things like potpourri that you would necessarily sprinkle. I think that some of that may have been there, but you also have something that would have been in a liquid form. But back there in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 1, they come to actually see the sepulchre. And that's a detail I think that's overlooked a lot of times. But sometimes people are curious. They want a second look. They want to go back and, for whatever reason, see something again. And that's what we have here. You have, if you, excuse me, look over Luke's account. This is Luke chapter 24 and verse 3. They entered in and found not the body of the Lord Jesus. And then, kind of trying to bring us back up to speed and also proceed with a slightly different take, Matthew or John chapter 20 and verse 1. Now on the first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene early while it was yet dark unto the tomb and seeth the stone taken away from the tomb. So it seems to me, and again we don't have all the details, we do have some, and trying to piece them together is sometimes a little bit of an imperfect process, but we're going to do the best that we can. It seems to me that you have multiple women coming to the tomb of Jesus. There is that desire, Matthew chapter 28 and verse 1, to see what had taken place. You've also got the desire to bring some spices, as we said last time, maybe to kind of clean things up a bit from maybe what the men did or in the minds of the ladies did not do. And Mary is at the lead of the pack, so to speak. She's the one who's out there in the forefront, the one who seems to actually be a little bit ahead of some others. And she comes, sees that the tomb has been opened up, and then as you look at John 20 verses 1 and 2, and we'll talk more about John chapter 20 a little bit later, while some of the ladies are still headed to the tomb, she is headed back. She wants to find Peter, she wants to find John, and give them a report as far as the body of Jesus has been taken away and the location of the corpse was unknown. And as that's taking place, we just maybe put that in blue over here, John chapter 20, Mary, tomb. I'm going to put her down as the first revival, and then she leaves and wants to find Peter and John. All right, now as she's off, headed to find those two apostles, it seems to me that you have some other ladies who show up. And this is where things get a little tricky. There are some who would suggest that when you look at the other accounts, that would be Matthew, Mark, and Luke, that you have sort of a mass, not in the sense that there are hundreds or dozens, but that you have a group of women, and Matthew, Mark, and Luke describe that same group of women, and they describe these ladies from different perspectives. And sometimes it happens when we look at the life of Christ. I do think that's possible. I also think that there is an alternative explanation, and though I can't maybe answer every question to my full satisfaction, I'm a lot more comfortable presenting the second option. And I raised this last week as far as a possibility, that I think that you have, after Mary, I believe that you have at least two other groups of women who come to the tomb of Jesus. And that's what we want to see if we can sort through tonight. Now, you remember I talked a little bit about Mark chapter 16, and you can either head over there. We'll probably need some supplemental readers as we go on throughout class, and we'll get some helpers with that a little bit later. But do you remember from Mark chapter 16, we highlighted this last week, that there were some ladies, they come to the tomb, and they were intrigued, they were amazed, they're shocked, but at the same time, Mark says they didn't say anything to anybody. And if you remember from that discussion, if you'll think back, I made the point that it might be that Mark was saying that they didn't say anything to anybody for a period of time. And then later, they overcame maybe some fear and whatnot, and then they started to speak. That is definitely a possibility. But as we look at this from a slightly different perspective tonight, it's also possible that what Mark described is exactly right for that group of women. That they came and they had some experiences and they never told anybody. But then you have another group of women that showed up and they reacted in a much different way. Let's go back to Mark's account. And again, whether you're looking at the sheet, we can get most of the verses, I think, from it, or you're looking at the text. So Mark chapter 16 and verse 5. And entering into the tomb, they, well, again, that's obviously more than one. They saw a young man sitting on the right side, arrayed in a white robe, and they were amazed. These ladies, whether you think it's the first group or it's that composite group, they see this fella, and how is he described? Mark says he was a young man, and he's wearing what kind of clothing? He's arrayed in white, and is he standing or sitting? Sitting, and sitting where? He's sitting on the right side of the tomb. And the reaction of the women is they were amazed. Now, we see that word translated young men some other times in Scripture. It would be, for example, used over there in Matthew chapter 19, verses 20 and 22, Mark chapter 14 and verse 51. You sometimes have some young men coming to Jesus. So when you see that word, I would not understand that to be somebody like a boy, 8, 10. You're thinking maybe someone who's in the 20s, maybe the 30s, somebody who's maybe a good picture of health. Now, as I look at this, as I go back to another passage, Matthew chapter 28 and verse 5, again, we don't have all the details, but it seems to me that we might be dealing with the same angel that we have back there in Matthew chapter 28. Remember? Matthew chapter 28 and verse 1, Mary Magdalene shows up, you've got the great earthquake, you've got this angel, verse 2, that descends from heaven, rolls away the stone, sits in it, his appearance is like lightning, and that's in verse 3. And you've got the guards, they become like dead men because of the terror. And then verse 5, and the angel answered and said unto the women, fear not. It sounds to me like that is the same angel. Again, I can't be 100% sure, but it sounds to me like the angel that was the one that rolled away the stone. Remember, we said it not only rolled away the stone, it sort of picked it up and moved it. We talked about the fact that it was a stone of maybe 2.5 tons. So if that's the same angel, think about that now in terms of Mark chapter 16. What did that angel do to the men, the guards who were at the tomb? It freaked them out. I mean, they're scared to death. It made these guards to the point where they just lost control of themselves, maybe traumatized to the point where they just went into maybe a comatose state for a little while. And if this is the same angel that's appearing to these women, as you look at the account in Mark 16, yes, you begin to see why, even though the angel says, come to seek Jesus of Nazareth, he's been crucified, he's risen, he's not here, behold the place where they laid him, but go and tell the disciples and Peter, he goeth before you into Galilee, there you're going to see him. And they went out, and what they do, they, Mark 16, 8, what they do, they, all right, translation in the King James says quickly. Not all translations have that word because of a manuscript variation. The ESV says they fled from the tomb. They were trembling. There was astonishment. And they did not say anything to anybody, for they were afraid. Again, that to me lines up very well with that angel over there in Matthew chapter 28 and verse 1, especially when you think about the time of morning. So that's how I'm going to be looking at the text. You also have here some other things. If this group, again, got Mary, let's come back over here and we'll have a little flow chart. Now we've got Mark 16, let's just say first group of women. Amazed, terrified, and they stay silent. Then you have, as you look at Luke's account, in Luke chapter 24, some more women. And the question becomes, who are the women in Luke's account? Betty?
Good question.
Okay.
You say Mary Magdalene was the first of the tomb. It also says that Mary, the mother of James and Salome, was with her. And Matthew and in Mark, the first chapter, first verse.
Yeah. I think that they were coming together as a group, and Mary, for whatever reason, took the lead, broke off from the group.
So you don't think that Mary was actually at the tomb with her whenever she turned and left.
When he turned left?
When Mary Magdalene turned and left. You don't think the other Mary was there at the tomb?
When you look at John.
Well?
Okay. I want to make sure I'm grabbing the thought correctly.
Okay. Matthew, the first verse, Matthew and the first verse in Mark.
Okay.
That Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, that's Matthew.
Yes.
Mark says Mary Magdalene and the mother of, and Mary, the mother of James and Salome.
Brought spices,
they brought spices that they might anoint them. And very early on the first day of the week, they come to the tomb when the sun is risen, and they were saying among themselves, I mean, it's like they're talking as, you know, a group there together. So you're saying that Mary Magdalene broke off from the group and went ahead? Even though she left, and even though John just says her, and they left, she left, it doesn't say, and Luke even says, and they came prepared.
Yeah, I think I need to rephrase that a little bit. You've got them coming together, Mary breaks off and goes back to see Peter and John.
Okay, but they were still all at the tomb.
I think that you have to say that they came to the tomb together. So.
So where do you get that this is the second group of women in this second and third verse there of Mark? Where do you get that's another group of women or a different group of women?
Okay.
If Mary headed off, John chapter 20, verses 1 and 2.
But that left the other women there.
Right, and there would be the other group. That group that I'm talking about from Mark chapter 16.
They were the same group, it's just that Mary Magdalene broke off from them, but the rest of the group was there.
Okay, and that's why I described it as the first group. So again, I may not have stated that very well, but you've got the group of women, they want to see what has taken place, they've got the spices, headed there.
Where do you pick up that there is another group of them, I guess? I've always thought it was the same group.
And like I said, that's...
She broke off and ran to get the disciples, but the rest of the group, I've always thought, stayed there. I've never picked up that there was more than one group.
Okay. Let's pick up what we've got from Luke's account and see what happens. But again, let's go back and bear in mind that if they came together... I think that is a good way to state that. Mary heads back, and you've got the group that she was with in Mark chapter 16. And Mark says that they didn't say anything. They were afraid. So that fear, that lack of communication about Jesus' resurrection, either that was temporary or it was not. And that becomes important because when we turn over to Luke's account, we begin to get some additional information. And that's why I say I can't look at this and satisfy all the questions that I have, but this, to me, satisfies a lot more questions than saying it was just one group, and that's going to tie in all the details that we have for Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So let's head over to Luke chapter 24 for a little bit and see what we've got. As you're turning over there, let me make this quick point as well. Back in Mark chapter 16, you've got the information about the women being told to go and share this information and that the Lord was going to appear to the disciples in Galilee. Why specify Galilee, do you think? Why do you think that angel made that reference in Mark chapter 16? Where were most of the disciples from? Galilee. So if you've got the resurrection, or at least the body is missing, and these guys are going to go somewhere, well, you kind of go back to where's familiar, where's home, and that would make sense. And then, two, you also think about the fact that Jesus had talked about that previously. You also have this point, too, before we get into Luke chapter 24. Back there in Mark chapter 16, the angel had talked about, you know, tell the disciples, and then Peter is especially named. Why do you think the angel specifically mentioned Peter? Yeah, you think about his recent denials, not just once, not just twice, but three times. And if Peter gets news of the resurrection, he might be thinking, well, I'm not sure he still wants me to be called an apostle, let alone a disciple.
So the angel was especially mindful of that. And that brings up one other little note or two, I think, that is significant. When you start looking at the angel back there in Mark chapter 16, the knowledge that he had was noteworthy. He knew that Jesus had some disciples. Can't say for sure that he would have been able to name them all, but he certainly was familiar with Peter. And then, do you remember over there in Acts chapter 19 and verse 5, you've got the seven sons of Sceva. The fellow was trying to cast out demons, and the demon said, you know, Jesus I know, and Paul I know, but who are you? And then he was the demon that attacked the guy. I've always thought that was kind of interesting, that the forces of hell, you might say in Acts chapter 19, knew who Paul was, certainly knew who Jesus was. And one fellow made the comment one time, he said, do the forces in hell know your name? Ever since I heard that, that has been a thoughtful point to me. Are you an active enough Christian where the forces of hell know your name? If not, that's probably a problem for you, spiritually speaking. But isn't it interesting to think that angels, good and bad, may have some knowledge of who you are? Certainly that would seem to be the case with the devil. I mean, if you're not a Christian or not doing the kinds of things that you want, he's probably not all that interested in you because he's already got you. But if you are a Christian, considering whether or not the devil knows your name is kind of a thought-provoking statement. All right. If the explanation that I'm tossing out is correct, then you do have another group of women.
Brad, how does he know?
Oh, okay. I thought we were through with that, so let's just back up for a little bit.
I'm just curious. How does he know?
All right, the devil?
Yeah. Or the angel. How would they know?
Well, again, I guess you could ask the question, how do we learn a person's name?
Well, yeah, so that means they can hear us?
That's an interesting question. Some people have asked how far the devil can go as far as getting information about us. You know, Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 7, the devil being able to tempt us because of certain circumstances. When you think about Peter's statement in 1 Peter chapter 5, he's looking, he's like a lion that is looking for prey to devour. So if you're looking for prey to devour, you know, you might not know the name. I mean, that's obviously not important in the animal kingdom. But you are going to try to figure out as much as you can about your possible prey and be the best possible adversary. Well, if he's walking the earth, as Peter describes, then I think inference would suggest that yes. Now, why would you know a person's name, or why would you be interested in the person's name? Think about Luke chapter 22. I think it's Luke 22, verses 31 and 32. Jesus said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan asked to have you, that he might sift you as wheat. If I remember correctly from the Greek text there, the plural is used. It wasn't just Peter that Satan wanted, it was the whole batch. So again, if you're going to go after someone as far as an adversary, the more you know about them, get some reconnaissance. And, you know, just as we would identify a person today, you know, you're Julie and this is a place where you live and, you know, you've got the house on a hill, you know, whatever it might be. Trying to identify that, you know, if you're going to be one of Satan's helpers, to me that would be logical as far as this is a person I want to target. All right, Don, and then we'll take Tim's hand.
Matthew, Mark. Were Mark and Luke present in that disciples at that time? Or only Matthew and John?
Okay, what do you mean were they present?
Well, we got the four Gospels. Peter was there, of course, and other apostles, but John and Matthew were more likely there as one of the 11 apostles, right? Mark and Luke were not there firsthand.
Luke certainly was not.
Was Mark firsthand there?
Again, Don, I don't know that I can answer that. I don't know that there's any way. I mean, Luke makes it clear as you look at the beginning of his book. He talks about how he researched the things very carefully. So I would take from that that, no, he was not there. With Mark, again, he had to be, as I look at some things in his book, not far from it, but exactly how close he was to it, I don't know. Tim?
Well, the devil, he thought he knew Job, too. He thought he knew Job, but he didn't. And that was one of the things that God wanted to show the devil, that you don't know what you think you know. I do, but you don't. But he only deals with all of us on our weaknesses. He can't make us do anything. We allow him to have his way through our own lusts and our own weaknesses. But he can't make us do anything. But he knows that. You know, that's why he goes after our weaknesses. Just like Peter, one of his weaknesses was that he was a person that was impetuous, occasionally lost his temper, the devil knew that and would try to, you know, try to cash in on those things. Mm-hmm. Well, that with all of us.
Back in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul specifically says that the devil tempts you. And that makes your point, that he cannot force us, he cannot compel us, but he can make things very attractive. That's true individually. That would be true in a family. That would be true in a congregation. That would be true in a city, true in a nation. So he and his helpers work on multiple fronts. Sometimes it might be focused on an individual. Sometimes it might be, and you see that, I think, specifically in the book of Revelation. You have large masses of people, maybe an entire region, certainly maybe on a city level, and even on a national and world level.
So he's able to roam the world.
Yeah.
Not just Goshen. He's able to roam the world, and yeah. He sees the shortcomings of everybody.
Yeah.
And so he looks at all those shortcomings, and he goes, this is the average of what they do and what they think and what their weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. And so he knows that those are the things that he needs to use against us.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Dolores?
Kind of just like the four different accounts and how many groups of women or how many women. And all four of them acknowledge that there was one than one woman. But, you know, and the four of them acknowledge that there was more than one woman. But, you know, and by having four different authors or four different witnesses or, you know, if you've got four people in here that talked about going to dinner with somebody, they might not mention everybody in the same group that the other person did. And wasn't Mary Magdalene closer to Jesus and John than the others? So that might be one reason why John kind of focuses on her, because that was someone closer to him.
We're going to see that a little bit more when you go over into John 20, about verse 11 and following, that she really sort of takes center stage. Okay, let's head over to Luke chapter 24 for a bit and see. And again, can't answer every possible question, but at least I'll lay this out for you. All right, Luke chapter 24, verses 3 through 5. Let's take a look at that. Starting with verse 3, you know, they come, they find the stone rolled away. Verse 3, they entered in, they found not the body of the Lord Jesus. And it came to pass, while they were perplexed thereabout, behold, two men stood by them in dazzling apparel. And as they were affrighted and bowed down their faces to the earth, they said unto them, why seek ye the living among the dead? Luke said that they were perplexed. You have a specific angelic presence mentioned here. But when you look at Mark, how many angels are mentioned there? One. And you remember the other detail in Mark that's not mentioned here in Luke chapter 24? What was the age, if you can put an age in an angel? His appearance was young. So again, nothing is said about youth in Luke chapter 24, and you do have a reference to two angels. Now, does that necessarily mean that the accounts are different? No. It could be, as I think Dolores was indicating earlier. If you say, I saw a jogger wearing a black hat today, okay, that's a factual statement. Does that necessarily mean that there were no other joggers? No. Does that necessarily mean that there was no jogger who didn't have a hat? No. You simply have that statement, and you can't infer from that some other things. So inference is very powerful, and it can help us in a lot of ways, but you also need to be very, very careful with that. Luke described these angels as having dazzling apparel. So again, it's entirely possible. Don't know for sure. But it's entirely possible that you do have that angel at the tomb that rolled away the stone. Then perhaps you have another angel over here in Mark chapter 16, the one that had this youthful appearance. And now, as you look at Luke chapter 24, it's also possible that you have two more angels being introduced into what's being described as far as perhaps this second group of women. You do have, as you look at Luke chapter 24, some other points being made. Get to that in just a second. I do want to make one other quick point here. People today, when they think about seeing an angel, most enthused or not about that? Think most people would like to see an angel?
Yeah.
I think most people would say, yeah, I'd like to see an angel. But when you look at what we have over there in Mark chapter 16, and now what you have in Luke chapter 24, and some other angelic appearances in Scripture, how did people feel, even really righteous people, when they came face to face with an angel? They were terrified. So today people will say, oh, I saw an angel, talked to an angel, those kinds of things. Generally, that's not the response that we find in Scripture. You do have in Luke chapter 24, verses 5 through 7, some reassurance by these two angels. The creatures said to the women, "Why seek ye the living among the dead?" They reminded that Jesus was going to be delivered up into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and raised on the third day. Luke chapter 24 and verse 7. Now, these ladies, as they hear that, they're able to think. And as you look at verse 8, what do we find there? And they remembered his words. So at some previous time, Jesus had made that point, and now they were able to recall that. Then as you look at the account, let's find what we have in Luke chapter 24 and verse 9. And returned from the tomb, that would be these women, described by Luke, and told what? All these things to whom? To the 11. And then notice what's said at the end of that verse. And to the rest. I think these women wanted to talk. I'd say they wanted to have some conversation. So they're telling the apostles and they're telling the rest. Now, that becomes very unusual when you compare it to Mark chapter 16, remember? Mark chapter 16, you have these women, young angel, and they get this information and they flee from the tomb. They're scared stiff. And Mark says they don't say anything to anybody. So how do you reconcile Mark chapter 16 and Luke chapter 24? Well, again, a lot of people have said, well, that was a temporary silence. And again, that is an acceptable explanation. But it's also possible that you do have two different groups of women. The women in Mark chapter 16, they're just so freaked out, they don't say anything. And the other ladies in Luke chapter 24, they do, they give a report. I don't know, Betty. Like I say, it seems to me that you've got two groups. Now, maybe there is a little bit of an overlay between the two. You know, one ends up from here and here. I don't know. Those are some questions that I can't answer. We just don't have enough details for that. But as I say, the explanation based on the number of details that we have seems to me to suggest that we're dealing with two different groups. But if you don't believe that, which, I mean, that's perfectly fine, then you have to probably look at Mark chapter 16 from the standpoint that the silence was temporary. And then once they got over their fright, then the events in Luke chapter 24 happened. And that also works. It's not contradictory. It's just how do you want to approach the text? Okay, let's go back to Luke chapter 24. We talked about the fact that they go and they want to tell the apostles plus the others. And then you have, as Betty said it there in verse 10, now they were Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary the mother of James and the other women with them told these things to the apostles, verse 11. And these words appeared what? In their sight as nonsense, idle talk is the ASV. And what was the other reaction? They disbelieved them. Oh, can you imagine how happy those women were? I don't suspect that it was a good day for them. One source noted, and this is, I think, a quote we're sharing. He said, in this culture, women were on a very low rung of the social ladder in first century Palestine. Again, I think we all know that. There are old rabbinical sayings that said, let the words of the law be burned rather than delivered to women. And blessed is he whose children are male, but woe to him whose children are female. A woman's testimony was regarded as so worthless that they weren't even allowed to serve as legal witnesses in a Jewish court of law. So if you can think about that in terms of today's world. I mean, it just, you know, would go over like a lead balloon, so to speak. I mean, women would be out in force and it would not be positive. But that's how things were in the first century. And yet, we've talked many times about the fact that God does things in ways that man doesn't. Well, if you're going to go out, the most important event in the world, that is the resurrection of Christ from the dead, and you're going to give that information to some witnesses who are looked upon as people that you wouldn't, you know, give God's law to, you wouldn't trust as far as testimony in a human court, that's really not the way to go out and spread the message as far as the things that men would normally do. Doesn't have the kind of sensationalism, doesn't have the kind of, you know, trappings behind it that people would normally expect in our day and time. Anything that you want to add or ask before we try to tie in some of the things from John 20? Okay. Peter and John, as you skip over to John chapter 20, you can see that in the sheet. We'll also try to pick that up from the text. I don't think we're going to be able to go quite far enough if you've got the handout. But in John chapter 20, verses 1 and 2, you find that Peter and John, at this point in the game, they do deserve a little extra credit. Because Luke chapter 24, you've got the women, they're giving their information, and it's looked upon as idle talk, as nonsense. But Peter and John, for whatever reason, they're willing to go and check some things out. You see that in John chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. And then in the next two verses, John chapter 20, verses 3 and 4, you've got these two apostles. They are going towards the tomb, and what word is used to describe how they get there? They ran. So again, they're very curious, we would think, very excited, and that's reflected by the text. Who arrives first? John chapter 20 and verse 4. John. Why do you think he got there first? Well, okay, maybe faster. Maybe Peter wasn't having a good day. It might be that Peter was older than John. It might be that John was more athletic, so we don't know. But anyway, John gets there first. Does John, even though he gets there first, enter the tomb first? No, and we know that from John chapter 20 and verse 5. When you think about this, he's stooping and he's looking in. What would that suggest to you about the entrance? Yeah, I think it's probably not going to be very high. So, or these guys could have been fairly tall too, I guess. That's a possibility as well. When you look at that word which is translated stooping in, it's used five times in the New Testament. I'll give you the other four places and then make this little point about it. The other four would be Luke chapter 24, Luke chapter 24 and verse 12. It's also used again in John 20, John 20 and verse 11. The other two passages come from James and Peter. James 1:25 and 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 12. Three of the five times describe stooping and looking into the Lord's tomb. The other two times it occurs, it describes a careful search for truth. And I think that's interesting, and that's reflected here. Carol, did you have a thought?
I was just going to say maybe John was a little more cautious. He went up there, looked in before he ran in, but Peter being
ambitious, as Peter. Yeah, that leads me into the next point that I wanted to make. You find that John, he's going to be a little more thoughtful in some respects. What might have been going through John's mind rather than just dash into the tomb? I mean, they're excited, right? I mean, they're running, but John gets there and he puts the brakes on a bit. Why?
Just kind of see what the layout is in the tomb.
Yeah, I mean, they had some guards, so again, even if they're not on the outside, I mean, it might be kind of like before putting your hand in the hole, you might want to check that out a bit, Brian.
You might be thinking this is a trap.
Well, and that's possible, too. Some thoughtfulness there. Anything else?
Maybe a little dark in the tomb, but no. Were the angels still there at this point?
I don't know that we can establish that one way or the other. It doesn't sound like it, but I don't know that we can prove that absolutely.
It might have been a little dark in there.
Okay. What about the defilement? We've talked about that before. And John may have, again, trying to process all this. Well, there's reason 1, 2, 3, 4, and if nothing else, you have the 7-day period of defilement. So there are a lot of reasons that he may have decided that let's just think this through a little bit before rushing headlong in there like Peter was willing to do. Well, or they reappeared. Yeah, again, we don't have a lot of details. We can look at this and say it was absolutely this way. And again, it's just the nature of God wasn't going to satisfy necessarily all the curiosity questions that we can ask. So that's why we're trying to lay out some possibilities, but still leave enough flexibility in there for some other options. Yeah.
The angel might have spoke to them, one or the other?
Maybe. Again, there are just so many questions there that without more information, we just can't come down on one side of the fence or the other and say it was this way or that way. But it does leave a lot of things for fertile minds to consider. Maybe God knew that it wasn't the right time for any kind of angelic appearance. Because again, remember the angel said, go. Told the women, Luke chapter 24, well, and Mark chapter 16, you go and tell them. So it almost seems like it was going to be a little bit more on the faith, the testimony of the women than the angels. So Okay, let's, Tim.
The angels were moving about a little bit because one of them was sitting, you know, sitting down earlier at the mouth of the tomb, and then this says they're inside the tomb, one at the head and one at the feet of where he laid. So
yeah,
it's possible that they weren't there at that instant when John stooped down and looked in there.
We don't know a lot of things about angels, but we do know from our perspective if there are some similarities. If you had an event like this, do you think that there would be multiple people who would like to participate? I think that's just a natural reaction. Now, the Bible talks about in the book of Hebrews an innumerable host of angels. So there were a lot of angels to choose from, so to speak, as far as, do we have anybody that's probably willing to go? So God certainly could have used one. God could have used none, had he so chosen. But if they have some similar character traits with us, it seems to me that you may have had multiple angels. In fact, maybe every angel that wanted to participate. And maybe God was allowing multiple ones to have some part in it. Maybe just to the extent that we've looked at, maybe broader.
Could it be, too, that the men were just going in to do business? Let's go check and see if what she's saying is right.
Yeah.
What do you mean he's gone? Okay, there's the tomb open. They may not have been as perceptive as Mary, who was already being so emotional that, you know.
Yeah.
And they could have just hid themselves from them until Mary stepped in, too.
I may use this again as far as a class or sermon, but I read a statement, and this isn't probably true in every single sense, but men see in black and white, women see in color. I like that statement because in some ways I think that's true. The women seeing in color, I think angels showing up and giving them some information. The men, all right, let's see if it's true. And then they end up going home, which seems, and we haven't gotten that far yet, but that seems like kind of an odd reaction if they saw angels. So that's one more thing that inclines me to think, as you said, they were businesslike. It's, let's check it out. Okay, he's gone. We can't figure it out. Let's just go home, and we'll get some more information later. We'll just, yeah. Yeah, and I think the women, because of some differences between men and women, may have fared a lot better with angelic intervention than Peter and John may have. But again, that's speculation. That it? Okay, let's go back and look at some other things as far as where we stopped. We talked about the fact that Peter did immediately go inside the tomb. That's in John 20 and verse 6. He sees the grave clothes. Now, this is interesting. The word translated beholdeth in John 20 and verse 6. That's the American Standard Translation. You may have some other similar words there. You often think of Peter being impetuous, but just because a person is impetuous, does that mean that they are not able to examine something critically? They might be the first guy to pick something up, and that might not be the smartest thing to do, but once they get it in their hands, they might be able to subject that to an examination that's as good as anybody of a different personality type. And that's what you see with that word which is translated behold. It indicates an intense survey of the grave clothes. So yes, Peter is a little more forward looking and acting as far as John, but once he gets in there, he is really checking out this stuff. And then you have John, back there in verse 5, I believe, of John 20, the Bible says he saw. So he doesn't make that hasty exit, but Peter's examination does seem to be more thorough than John. And then let's take a look at this. In John chapter 20 and verse 5, notice that word that describes the clothing that Jesus had. Plural or singular? Plural. The cloths. Now we've already seen, remember we talked about the clean cloth? Now it's plural. That inclines me to think that that clean cloth was probably cut up into strips. We talked about that before, that just as you would bandage someone like we see in John chapter 11, that's probably what happened here. Peter also sees this napkin. We'll have more to say about that in a later class. Can't get that far quite tonight. And then John enters the tomb. Again, an indication that he probably wanted to think things out, and a good indication that they had some differences when it came to personality. John chapter 20 and verse 8. What John saw caused or led him to do what? It led him to
believe.
Now, it may seem incredible, Let's tie in with John chapter 20 and verse 9, the information that we've got back in Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18, verses 31 to 34. Who wants to go back there in Luke 18 and read that for us? Luke 18, starting with 31, going down through 34. All right, Brian, Luke 18, 31 to 34.
Then he took unto him the 12 and said unto them, Behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and all things that are written by the prophets concerning the Son of Man shall be accomplished. For he shall be delivered unto the Gentiles, and shall be mocked, and spitefully entreated, and spitted on. And they shall scourge him, and put him to death, and the third day he shall rise again. And they understood none of these things, and this saying was hid from them, neither knew they the things which were spoken.
Okay, they didn't get it. The saying was hid from them. It didn't dawn on them at the time. And that's what we see in John 20 and verse 9, but it still seems incredible. 29 says, For as yet they knew not the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. Now you would think that if somebody tells you something, and even if it, for whatever reason, is not able to process in your mind, it would sort of be there as a distant memory, but maybe there was some special thing that the Lord did back there in Luke chapter 18, I don't know. But they did not get it, even though Jesus had specifically talked about his resurrection on prior occasions such as this one.
Okay.
I'll take you a second, Betty. Carol, we start with you.
Sometimes you get a lot of information and you hear it and you remember it, but it doesn't dawn on you. So to say. And later something will happen. You say, oh, duh, that's what they were talking
yeah.
about.
And it may have been because this was probably just so far off the radar screen, they couldn't even begin to perceive what it meant. But at least for a while, it was, oh, hey.
It says there that it was hidden from them. That's kind of like the New Covenant was hidden from the first century, or the, not the first century, but the previous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was there, but people just didn't get it. Anybody know what a 410 shell looks like? 410 shell, shotgun shell. If you've ever seen a 12 gauge, I mean, it's a pretty good size shell. 20 gauge, you know, moderate size. 410 is the smallest shotgun. I mean, it's about that big. End of year. Okay. Anyway, fired a 410 earlier this year, and I don't know how, but one of the rounds ended up on my windshield, stuck right there in the windshield wiper. I probably went 5 miles without seeing the shell. And then all of a sudden, some wind caught it. And I'm thinking, what's that rattle? And then, well, hey, there's a 410 shell there stuck in my windshield wiper. Now, how did I go almost 5 miles down the road without seeing the 410 shell? I have no idea. I mean, it was there the whole time, in plain sight, so to speak. So it's kind of weird. But for whatever reason, like Carol was saying, things just don't necessarily click. In this case, I didn't see it, unbelievably. But that can happen. And that also happened for the Lord's disciples. Let's tie in a couple of the things quickly here, and then next week we'll start with the grave clothes. You have in John chapter 20, verse 10, what's the Bible say? At this point, the disciples, Peter and John, what do? They went away again. Are you kidding me? But that's what they decided to do. They left for home. And that same information is over in Luke chapter 24 and verse 12, but Luke 24, 12 has a detail that is not in all of our manuscripts. The Bible there says, and you'll probably find that in most translations, still, Peter was wondering at that which had come to pass. So that's interesting. John, remember John 20, I believe it's verse 8, what was his reaction? He believed. Peter, the one who has gone down and closely examined the grave clothes, what's he thinking? He's scratching his head wondering, man, what's going on? I mean, the bodies, you know, the grave clothes are here, and it just doesn't make any sense. And then now you've got Mary. She's, John chapter 20, verse 11, she's standing outside the tomb and she's weeping. She encounters, we'll talk about this more, Lord willing, in a later class. She encounters two angels. They're in white. They're sitting, one at the head, one at the feet of where Jesus had been laid. And more information about that will be found in John chapter 20, verses 11 through 13.